This is Line One, your health connection, a weekly program produced at the studios of KSKA. Each week, KSKA's host, Dr. Thad Woodard, puts you in touch with local and national experts in a variety of health and family issues. Opinions expressed are those of the host, guest, and callers, and do not represent those of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. Here's your host, Dr. Thad Woodard.
Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard, your host. My guest today is Joe Neal of National Public Radio, and I'll introduce Joe in just a second. First, I want to follow through on a series of discussions we've had at the beginning of each of our previous programs where I've been discussing something called logical fallacies. When you are listening to someone try to convince you of something or you're arguing with somebody about what's right and what's not right, we often are using argument, and those arguments have to be based to be true on logic and evidence. You have to remember just logic and evidence. We get caught up in a lot of emotion, a lot of comments. We've talked in the past about arguments from authority. Just because someone's an authority on the issue doesn't mean they're always right. It doesn't mean if they're appealing to your virtue or some other emotion such as fear that it has anything to do with being right or wrong. Today I want to just mention a non sequitur. That's probably the most basic logical fallacy, and that's a Latin term which means doesn't follow. And what it means is that the argument that's being used doesn't really follow from the premises that are made. And let me make a suggestion of a logical fallacy that may sound correct but really is not, and it'll be dealing with healthcare, which is our topic today. One might argue that the amount of money that a country spends on healthcare means that the health of its citizens is better. Now, that sounds pretty reasonable. However, it could be that the country is spending a lot of money on some individuals and not so much on other individuals, bringing down the health care of all on the average. Or also, the country might be spending a lot of money on administrative costs to give health care to its citizens, and in addition, using a lot of money for unproven treatments or treatments that are unwarranted. Therefore, spending a lot of money, but the outcome's not necessarily the best. So keep in mind, when you're listening to arguments and discussing situations with individuals, what's their evidence and what's the logic that they're using? Today, I have Joe Neal, who is a deputy senior supervising editor and correspondent on the science desk of NPR, joining us from Washington. He's won the prestigious Kaiser Family Foundation Meteor Fellowship in 2006 and 2007. And I asked Joe to join us today because of a series that he has produced called Healthcare for All, which is contrasting the U.S. and five Western European health systems. It's been running on National Public Radio for a while. He informs me it's going to continue to do so. And I'd very, very strongly recommend all go to NPR Radio, and we'll probably give you some links here in a minute. Actually, there's a link, as I think about it, on our website that'll get you to these podcasts. And Joe, thanks very much for taking the time to speak to us about Healthcare for All today.
Glad to be with you.
What led you or NPR to decide to do this kind of series of podcasts?
Well, first of all, you couldn't tell it from my title, but I'm actually a health editor here at NPR, and as such, I oversee our coverage and plan a lot of our stories. So sometimes I'm on the air, but most of the time I'm behind the scenes. And we have an incredible group of reporters here who have been following how healthcare is delivered in this country for 20 or 25 years now, certainly back to the days when the last time we were talking about changing the healthcare system in a major way back at the beginning of the Clinton administration. And we... As we were looking at what was happening in the election this year, and in particularly in the primaries, about this time last fall and winter, healthcare had become a big issue between Senator Clinton and Senator Obama, and we said, well, maybe healthcare is going to heat up again. Maybe it's going to be a big issue. What can we do to inform the public on this upcoming debate? And as we were talking about some of the things that we had all covered back in the early 90s, we said, well, you know, one thing that's changed that the public hasn't really kept up with, that the media hasn't kept up with, is the idea that the healthcare systems in Europe are really quite successful, and they don't have as many problems as people make them out to have. I think when Americans hear healthcare in Europe, they instantly think socialized medicine, and you know, that's sort of where it stops because we don't want socialism in this country. So, but the fact of the matter is, only England has England, the UK has a socialized medical system. The rest of the countries in Europe, the ones that we looked at, are a mix of private health care and public health care. And there really aren't long lines, and people really do get good care. And we wanted to, and of course they still have problems in doing that, but we wanted to bring a more up-to-date picture of universal health care in Europe so that when we start hearing this debate in this country in the next few months, people will be prepared to think about it.
In the countries that you looked at their healthcare system is Switzerland, Germany, the United Kingdom, Great Britain, France, and the Netherlands.
That's right.
What stands out besides the fact – well, let me just ask that question. What stands out as being most different between those countries and their healthcare systems and what we are doing currently in the United States?
Well, the biggest thing is that everyone gets health care there. Mm-hmm. In Germany, virtually 100% of people have access to health care, and they don't have to pay. I mean, they pay for it through their employer, but there aren't uninsured people, essentially. There are something like 200,000 people out of a country of 80 or 90 million. There are only 200,000 that are uninsured. You know, you compare that to the U.S., where a statistic I saw today is that we have 2 million people a month losing their health insurance in this country, and that there are 46 million people total in the U.S. who don't have health insurance coverage. Right away, that just jumps out at you. In France, the coverage rate is like 98.5%. Switzerland, it's close to 99%. I don't have the exact figures off the top of my head, but these are countries where people don't struggle to find health care. It's there, it's organized, and their life expectancies are longer, and they're just in general healthier than people are in America overall.
Mm-hmm. And the reason they all have all the citizens have universal health care, or all everybody has health care, is because it's mandated. Much like in Anchorage, you are supposed to have car insurance. You must have health insurance. Is that right?
Right. In all these countries, that is how it works. In England, it's different because you don't actually have insurance. It's a government-run system where the government owns all the most of the hospitals, pays the doctors, buys the drugs, and you just sign up and go to a clinic and get your health care directly through the government. In the other countries, Germany, for example, you are required to pay something like 8 or 9% in taxes each year out of your salary, and that goes directly to health care. You have to pay other income taxes, but generally about 8 or 9% of your taxes goes directly to health care, and then your employer matches that amount. And if you look at the difference between Germany and the U.S. or France and the U.S., that amount that's being spent out of pocket is almost twice as much in the U.S. when you consider how much we pay for deductibles and copayments and drugs that aren't covered and insurance premiums that your employer is making you pay more and more for. And plus, we pay a part of our income tax that goes to the government programs like Medicare and Medicaid. So if you compare the two, or you compare a European country with the U.S. on paper, you're going to find that the Europeans are paying less out-of-pocket, getting essentially the same quality of care, better in many cases, than the average person in the U.S.
So those are two big issues that I would guess that you've already alluded to that most Americans do not believe at the onset of this conversation or your podcast, and that is that the European countries are socialistic in their administration of their health care, and two, that it costs more. In fact, they're not socialistic and they cost less. Those are
That's right, except with the exception of the UK where it is socialized.
Yeah, right.
But in Switzerland, France, Holland, and other countries in Europe, their employer-based systems like the U.S. has their variations, but people get their insurance through their workplace. The employer generally shares the cost. In some countries, the employer is mandated to share the cost, as in Germany and France. The employer voluntarily shares the cost, but that's right. I think what you say is right.
And the other the corollary of the cost, which is surprising, is that for these other countries that we've just mentioned, often it's about half on a per capita basis or a gross national product basis of what we're spending in the United States.
Oh, yeah. The U.S. is spending per person an average of $7,000 a year on health care, and I'm sure it's actually quite a bit higher because those statistics are about a year old and it goes up quite a bit each year. And in England, for example, I have to look at my cheat sheet here, it's only about $2,700. And in France, it's $3,300. So they're paying per person on health care about half what we pay in the U.S.
So the next logical question or misconception is the same thing. Since we spend so much more and we do it so much better, I shouldn't say that. I'm not sure we do that. But we spend so much more, we must be getting better, more for our money. Is there evidence to suggest that's true or not true?
Well, it depends on you have to be in the right place at the right time in this country to get the best health care. Uh-huh. I mean, we absolutely have the finest research facilities. We lead the world and have for many years in researching new therapies and all kinds of research and in surgery, and some of the facilities we have are world class. But it's a matter of getting to them. Now, in Germany, there are far fewer MRI machines and CAT scanners, but if you need a CAT scan, you can get one in Germany, and you probably won't have to wait any longer than it takes you to get an appointment here. If you have insurance here, of course, over there, you just have to make a call, and you have a card, and you show it to them, and it's paid for. You never see a bill. That's really, you ask me what the differences are in these countries. People never see their health care bills, and they don't overuse the system like people do here. It seems like every time you get a headache here, a doctor will order a CAT scan, and there are many reasons for that, which we could go into. But I think that the quality of care between the U.S. and many of these nations that have the advanced nations that have universal health care, overall, you have to say that they're doing a better job. Our life expectancy is lower overall than these countries. The number of infants who die within a month of birth is much higher in this country. I think, if you stand back and look at it objectively, you just have to say it's better over there.
Yeah, another recent study looking at unpreventable deaths found that we were the worst of all industrial countries in being able to do that. And not only are we probably not getting our money's worth, I'll say that at least, we're getting worse. The studies looking at it over the last 25 years is that we're falling further behind as well. Is that your gestalt or your knowledge?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. The studies do show that. The study you're referring to about how well the U.S. is preventing deaths that can be avoided came out of another study that was done 5 years earlier. A little different method was used. That study, I think it was in 2000, showed that of about 50 countries, the U.S. ranked 37th, and they were looking at things like universal access to health insurance and how much high technology there was and the availability of drugs. And that study showed us at 37th, and there was a lot of hue and cry saying, oh, that study was poorly designed. So they came back and did this other one that you just mentioned, And they just looked at 17 countries, and lo and behold, the U.S. ranked 17th out of 17. I mean, every time the studies are done, the U.S. ranks near the bottom of countries that we really should be leading.
Let me, I'm going to go ahead and try to see if there's some people listening that want to get in contact and make some comments, Joe. For those of you who are listening to Line 1, you can reach us at 550-8433. That's our local number, 550-8433. Also, we have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And if you're listening recently, you know you can get us on email as well at line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, all one word, at kska.org. And please remember, if you're listening between 7 and 8 on Monday evening, you're listening to a taped rebroadcast. This is the time right now before 3 o'clock that you need to call in and ask your questions. Well, let me turn my question about what our expectations, what we think is really going on around a little bit. What is there were some comments by people who were interviewed by your reporters in Western Europe, and what were their misconceptions about our healthcare system?
You mean people in the reporters' misconceptions or the Europeans?
The Europeans who were interviewed.
The Europeans generally, they were just – they were astonished that anyone would go bankrupt over health bills in the U.S. It was a concept that over and over again people would say, what? What do you mean? People, their finances are affected by their health care because they are so removed from having to pay directly for health care because everything is taken care of, that it's just a completely foreign concept. And I was watching, there was a PBS show just before we did our series, and we aired part of it. And there was this, I remember vividly, this doctor asked the reporter a couple of times to say, bankrupt, what? What do you mean, bankrupt? And he was sure that the translator had gotten it wrong, but... You know, more than 50% of the bankruptcies in this country are due to medical bills.
Sure.
So this is, you know, it's a situation that's just incomprehensible to people who think that the U.S., the greatest country in the world, would have a situation where people are going broke and losing their houses and everything else because they can't pay for a trip to the doctor.
Okay. We do have a caller. I'm going to go ahead and ask David what his comments are. David, you're on line one.
Great. Thanks, Ted. I just wanted to say the timeliness of this is great because the Anchorage School District, they participate in Drama, Debate, and Forensics, which has a nationwide program. And the question for the Lincoln-Douglas debate currently is the French healthcare system.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if the gentleman that you have online from NPR, if he could just simply sum up the French healthcare system for the students with regards to what he sees as their three greatest strengths, and then if there are weak points, what those are in his estimation.
Sure. All right. Good, David.
Yep. David. Yeah. That's pretty easy. First of all, like I've said so many times now, it's that everyone is covered. That has to be the first main point, the positive point about the French healthcare system. Second, they have, over the years, created some really top-notch, excellent medical care in various areas, and I would highlight cancer care. They created, based on what they had seen worked the best in the U.S., they developed some national guidelines to make sure that everyone in France was getting that high-quality care. And as part of that, and as part of the universal coverage system, and as part of treating people who have diseases that are very costly and take a long time to treat, in France, you don't have to pay any co-payments or deductibles or pay for any of your drugs when you have cancer or a number of other very serious diseases. Normally, the French system is a little bit like ours, that you go to the doctor and you pay a small fee, or you pay a small fee for your drugs. But it's very minimal. The third great thing about France is their maternity care and how they care for women from way before birth, from the beginning of pregnancy all the way till, you know, into the young years of a young infant's and a young child's life. And this was highlighted in the Michael Moore movie Sicko, which some people may have seen. And one of the motivations, you asked me, for why did we do this series? Well, Michael Moore did this movie and painted a picture that we thought needed to make sure that there was some journalism applied to some of the ideas that were floated there. And so we went to France to look at maternity care, because he said that everyone, all newborn mothers, or all mothers of newborns in France get diaper service. And that sounds ludicrous, because that would be super expensive. And it turns out that it's not exactly true, that it's only, you do get diaper service, but it's only if your child has special needs. But from the beginning of, with prenatal care, you get time off from work. While at the end of your pregnancy, you don't have to work up right to the very, very last day, just so you have enough money to survive. And then the nurses make home visits while you're pregnant. And then after the birth, the nurse continues home visits and makes sure everything is all right. And there's just a devotion to family that's built into the healthcare and social system there that doesn't exist here. Now I have to come up with three bad things. One thing is it's getting very expensive, and they're running huge deficits. They ran a $9 billion deficit this past year, and so they're going to have to cut back on various services, perhaps something like I just described.
They were offering health care to people who just took up residence there, total health care, as if they were a citizen when they weren't. And I thought that had to be looked at. And in fact, I think I was just listening to that particular podcast on my way to the program here today, is so many English people had immigrated over, perhaps because of health care and other reasons, that they almost eliminated that. But then they ended up, at least at the time of your program, they kept that going, as expensive as that must be.
Yeah, well, the European countries, because they're in the European Union,
right,
tend to, they, what you get in one country, you can go to another country and get, yeah. But there's some restrictions. There are about 200,000 people from the United Kingdom who live in France, and they bought vacation homes there because it's a lot cheaper than in England, and they have, you know, sought to get into the French healthcare system, mostly with success. We heard some stories of people saying that they thought that the French were, it wasn't as easy to get in to see a primary care doctor in France as it was in England, but then we heard the opposite story too. It was hard for us to judge exactly what the downsides for the immigrants from other European countries into France would be. I think it would be hard for me to come up with a third major problem in France. I think that the issue of dealing with the costs is going to be the hardest thing for them to deal with.
Which is universal. I mean, it's not a French thing. It's a U.S. thing. It's a German thing. Everybody's got the same issues. They still are spending half as much as we are, and by all accounts, the citizens are getting more for their money.
That's right. That's right. You don't... They're not horror stories. I mean, 20 years ago, and this is where all of this came up in the earlier debates, 20 years ago, there were a lot of horror stories. These were systems that were still developing. Many of them had arisen out of the ashes of World War II, and so they were still only 20 or 30 years into building comprehensive healthcare systems. And so there were a lot of rough spots. Now we're 50 years past, 60 years past World War II, and they have refined their systems. They continually tinker with them. There are problems. There are, you know, in England there's still lines, and but they've come up with solutions. And that's where the difference from America too, because our system only seems to spiral more out of control and become less amenable to fixing. While their systems tend to be organized into ways that actually repair themselves and heal themselves.
Also, there's more egalitarian, more care about each other's. And I want to come back to that issue because it relates directly to the health of a country's citizens rather than the amount of money spent. But before we do that, we do have another caller, and I'd like to take that that caller as well. Sean, you're on line one.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I had a question for you in relation to the figures you were giving us earlier about the money put into the healthcare system and the preventable deaths.
Right.
Right.
Let's see, Planned Parenthood, how much of our money is going to Planned Parenthood is what I want to know.
Boy, I don't know the answer to that.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
It just seems that a healthcare system that allows abortions and would you consider that a preventable death?
I know that wasn't counted in their statistics.
It wasn't counted in their statistics?
No.
Okay, because no. I think the figures are pretty high in how much of our tax money goes into the Planned Parenthood organization.
Well, I can tell you this, Sean, and I'm not sure what your agenda is, but the current experts in this area say that our biggest costs to healthcare are new technologies, new things that we're doing to treat people, to diagnose people, and not diseases, not abortion, not Planned Parenthood. And that is somewhat surprising. It was surprising to me. I would have guessed the aging population, but that's not it either. It's the new technologies. And some of these other countries are doing things to help control that.
I'm just wondering if our money could be better allocated.
Been
put into, abortion.
Well, I guess I can't answer because I don't know what percentage of our money is going into that. My guess is it's a very, very small percentage of our total health care bill.
Yeah, I would
agree
with
that.
Well, there's
a lot of abortions going on today,
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Well, thank you. I'll keep on researching.
You bet. You bet. Another thing that struck me, and I'm sure it must have struck you about these countries, Joe, is that the chronic care is another huge contrast to what is going on in the United States. You've already mentioned that the French have a very good system dealing with cancer, but also diabetes, autism. Evaluation of the Swiss, you used some correlations or comparisons between Americans with kids with chronic disabilities like autism. And it was across the board. They don't, in these countries, have to worry about it. There is no out-of-cost and pocket cost. And in fact, the healthcare got better is the message I got, the more problems you had with healthcare.
I think that's true. I should say, though, that I think I've oversimplified it a bit when I say that people don't pay anything out of pocket for healthcare, because in France there are small payments for deductibles and co-payments, and the other countries do have small payments. But, for example, you brought up autism. In Switzerland, we did a story about and compared how an autistic child was the care that an autistic child got in Switzerland and compared it to a family in Boston. In Switzerland, essentially what they do for families is they give them either every month or every quarter more or less a blank check. Well, not a blank check, a payment that will cover everything they need for schooling, for medical care, for home care. And they pretty much trust people to just spend it right. There's no extensive auditing that goes on, or there's no mistrust. What our reporter Julie Rovner, who did this story, told me about this was that she was struck that the Swiss really trust the people to spend their money properly and not waste it. And that goes back to what you're talking about with the social solidarity, where everyone feels that they have to take care of each other, and there's a philosophy over there where people do take care of each other, whereas in this country it's much more of a fly by the seat of your own pants, take care of yourself.
Right.
Pioneer mentality, and that's what we found in Boston with the family with autism. It was a struggle to get any help from the state. When they did get help, it was questioned how they were proceeding, and there was, you know, it was distrust and mistrust in a lot of situations. So I think that I now have forgotten what your original question was.
Let's see if I can remember what it was. I'm not sure
autism,
I remember.
Autism was the
story. It was the chronic disease issue.
Chronic disease, right.
That how much – it's another major contrast, not only the contrast of our costs, our contrast on who is how many of the population is actually covered, but how well and how much emphasis is put on those who have more healthcare problems,
right,
which is almost the opposite of what happens. Even if you have good health insurance, we hear of people. I have patients who are going, like you said, going bankrupt. Or I know a patient whose wife decided to quit her job, and they were going to get a divorce so that they could qualify for Medicaid. You know, I mean, these are amazing kinds of stories. What people are going to be able to pay for health care, which to the European in the countries that you interviewed is never an issue.
No, it just isn't, and there's so much emphasis on keeping families together and taking care of chronic diseases so that families can live a more normal life. In the autism case, the family in Boston had to essentially build their own residence for long-term care for the child, and because they couldn't get enough state, you know, help to do it in Switzerland. It's just, you know, the people come out to your house and help you and want to make sure that everything's okay. And it's true up and down the line. Diabetes in the Netherlands, for example, is another example where a chronic disease where in this country people don't always get, you know, they don't stay connected with the system, and it's difficult to manage complications and to prevent complications. There they have a whole legion of nurses that they train just to care for diabetics, and they go out and provide preventive care. And not that there is good preventive diabetes care in the U.S., don't get me wrong, but it's just not as organized as it is in, say, the Netherlands.
Well, let's talk about the Dutch healthcare system. That's the one system we have not mentioned. Do you want to kind of give us an overview of that, and so we understand it?
Well, the Dutch completely overhauled their system 2 years ago, and it remains to be seen how successful it will be. They turned to an American named Alan Enthoven, who has always been a big player in healthcare and played a role in the Clinton health reform plan that failed back in the early 90s. And he's always been a big proponent of managed care, of HMOs, of trying to deliver care in a more organized, rational fashion than just simply you go to the doctor, there's a bill, someone pays it, and next you go to the next episode. In a good HMO, there's a heavy emphasis on preventive care, and so what he essentially did was he created he advised the Dutch, and they took him up on it, to create a nationwide HMO that is designed to keep the cost down so that everyone can have care, because they were facing the same problem as every other country, that costs were just getting out of control, and high-tech medicine was driving the prices through the roof. So I think the jury's out on how well that's working. But, you know, as one example, the diabetes care teams, they have a system. One of the most interesting things that I heard was, and we did a story on, which is a system of after-hours care, where if you're sick at 7:30 in the evening or 10 o'clock at night, you don't have to go to an emergency room. You call up, and they come to see you. They have a roving team of doctors who are just always on call to go out and see patients. And we heard that in other countries, too, that home care, house calls, after-hours care, to keep people from going to the expensive hospital, emergency room-type places, that was one key way that they control costs. And that's something that I think has been a success in the Netherlands so far and probably will turn out to be one of the big ways that they keep being able to provide health care for everyone.
Okay. I have another caller. I'd like to take his call. Patrick, you're on line one.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Woodard, for taking my call, and thank you for this wonderful show. I have a question for Mr. Neal. Relative to the surveys and the polling that was done in other countries to compare health care programs. And what I'm wondering is, was there an analysis done with regards to the lifestyle of the people in those countries? Maybe a comparison of obesity, for example,
right.
Which I happen to personally feel is a personal choice. But could you relate to that a little bit? I know that we're at the bottom of the charts in a lot of areas, but is some of this self-induced,
right,
as opposed to a lack of proper health care?
So you're asking a good critical question. Is there a bias in this information? Are our health care costs so much more because we live a lifestyle that leads to more health care costs? Is that what you're saying?
Or problems, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good question.
Well, I think that obesity is a problem in Europe too. It's not on the same scale as the U.S. And as you said, it's a choice, perhaps, and not a problem. But there are costs associated with obesity, and the Netherlands, in particular, saw this coming and saw that people were eating more high calorie foods and being more sedentary and gaining more weight. And they looked at the U.S. and saw this enormous rise in diabetes that's happened in relation to the increase in body weight in this country. So they said, hey, wait, we may not be able to prevent the obesity epidemic, but we at least want to try to prevent diabetes or treat it very well so that people don't go into the severe diabetic complications like having to have amputations or dialysis or some of the other major problems, the things that are really expensive for the system. So when you ask, did they take into consideration the differences in the populations, I think there are many studies that do, but there is an obesity problem in Europe, but it isn't. Obesity is not as prevalent in Europe as it is in the U.S., and obesity in the U.S. definitely is driving some of the costs there.
Thank you. I just wanted to use obesity as an example, but in general, was there a comparison on how much of this was brought on by the way we live as opposed to just lack of medical care?
Well, our stories didn't specifically look at we looked at prevention in some cases, but you're talking, I think, about preventing disease as opposed to treating disease and not getting medical care. I think we were a little more focused on the quality of medical care people were getting when they're sick. There is an emphasis on prevention in Europe, particularly in Germany and Switzerland, and that people do tend to stay healthier longer, and that gives them longer life expectancies. I'm sort of getting the gist of it, and that could account for the lower life expectancy in the U.S., yes. So
you
make
so
a good
much.
Point.
Appreciate the information, for
okay.
sure.
Thanks, Patrick. Joe, we have another question. This comes by email, and it asks if we could speak about other countries and their critical care of the elderly, and then specific questions like what about offering and availability of open heart surgery after 80 years of age or dialysis? So we're getting into the issue here in a more generic sense of rationing of healthcare. Is rationing an issue as to a significant issue in how healthcare costs are controlled in these other countries, I guess, is a more general question to this question that was sent to me by email.
Yeah, in the United Kingdom, absolutely, rationing is quite explicit, and to the point where they have set up a national institute that reviews the costs of drugs and decides whether the drug is effective enough for the health system to pay for, and if it's not, then they won't pay for it. Now, you might be able to go get it yourself, but they're not going to pay for it. It's similar to what insurance companies do here, only it's done in a very open, public manner in government forums by a government committee. Would an 80-year-old get open-heart surgery in England? I don't know the answer to that, but I know in years past the answer would have been no. I think that as life expectancies do get longer with these advanced treatments, I mean, there are many Americans, even though the American life expectancy is only about 78 and a half, and it's pushing 80 in these other countries, I think as we see the success of these operations and treatments in our octogenarians and even in our nonagenarians, our 90-year-olds, I think there will be more pressure on the European health systems to provide that care. But absolutely, they do look at the bottom line when deciding whether a treatment is effective. And they may not explicitly say you're too old, but they'll simply say that the treatment isn't effective for a person your age.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. What about the whole issue of rationing healthcare? People will... or maybe thinking that we don't ration health care and the other countries do. Is that true?
Well, England's the most explicit on rationing. The other countries, less so. But in the U.S., I think people, I think in general over the years, people have said we don't have health care rationing here. And the fact is, every time a health insurance company says, no, you can't have that treatment, that's rationing. And the difference
Or you can't afford health insurance.
Or you can't afford, well, then that's right up front. You can't even afford to go to the doctor.
Right.
So that's rationing right there. In these other countries, you know, it's when the decisions are made to say, we're not going to cover Avastin for macular degeneration, it's a very expensive drug. When they make that decision, it's done in a public forum, and these countries are very used to having debates at the county level, the state level, and these are things that the public engages in. Do we think this is something that we should be spending our money on? In this country, it's a group of insurance, it's a bunch of people in a boardroom in an insurance company who are looking at their bottom line, saying, "Oh, we can't afford that." You know, I leave it to our listeners to decide which system they would rather have. But the profit motive in this country keeps, you know, a lot of people out of the system. Not that free enterprise is a bad thing, mm-hmm. but the emphasis on making huge profits by the drug companies and the insurance companies and some of the bigger organizations is certainly where, you know, the difference is that the European countries have, you know, don't their systems have taken that out of the equation and made it a much more public decision about whether people should be getting care or not versus in our country where it's done in boardrooms.
We have another caller who has a question about prescription drugs. We haven't talked about drug costs at all, and I'd like to go ahead and ask Julie if what her question is.
Hi. Actually, I wanted to make a comment. I've lived for extended periods of time in Australia over the past 12 years, and Australia's system, to me, seemed miraculously wonderful. For instance, their government negotiates with international pharmaceutical companies, including American companies, and as a result, even as a foreigner living there, prescriptions that cost me in America $430 a month cost me in Australia $117 a month, equivalent in American money. And had I been an Australian citizen, it would have been $53 a month, merely because pharmaceutical companies have to negotiate here in Australia, unlike in America, where our Congress has precluded Medicare and other entities from negotiating with pharmaceutical companies. And with respect to the previous caller who was raising the point about lifestyle factors, I can assure you that lifestyle factors are identical for Australians and Americans. And one final point about rationing is Australia does not do rationing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to make that point about, okay, especially about the pharmaceutical.
I actually, if you could stay on the line, Julie, how do they pay for, I don't know anything about Australia. Is it insurance-based or employer-based or government-run? I don't know.
My knowledge may not be complete enough because as a long-term visitor there, what I had was I purchased from an Australian quasi-governmental entity. They make available healthcare coverage for long-term visitors. People are going to be there more than 6 months. I believe that for Australian residents, it's a form of socialized medicine in the sense that if you are employed, you can get it through your employer, but if you're not getting it from your employer, you are covered merely because you're an Australian citizen.
Yeah.
And they have a mix. They are not the English system. They do have some private hospitals, merely because starting about 25 years ago, there was a push by the then conservative government to try, unfortunately, to try and make their system more like Americans. That move has stopped in the last few years. And as a result, there's some private hospitals where if you're filthy rich or if you're a foreigner with sky's-the-limit insurance, you can go there. But I was never able to figure out during the years that I was there why anyone, I never knew anyone among my middle-class Australian colleagues, whoever would go to one of the private hospitals because the other hospitals were wonderful. I certainly got wonderful care there following a disastrous car accident. And well,
your larger point that the difference is negotiation. That was a common theme we found in Europe, was that in France, for example, France started out with a system very similar to the U.S. many years ago where people got their health care through their employer. But what changed in France and what changed in these other countries was that the government started negotiating the rates for doctors and hospitals and drugs with the doctors, hospitals, and drug companies, and said we won't pay more than this. And that kind of negotiation is the key element to how they keep costs low in many of these countries.
Yes, that's definitely true in Australia, that they have negotiated with doctors' organizations, physical therapist organization, and so on and so forth.
And it's something we don't do in this country. And
right.
that's one of the key debates in health reform always, are that the insurance companies, doctors, and hospitals have valid concerns about price controls, but that's where the health reform stops is when you start to get too close to people's pocketbooks in these industries, then they say, whoa, let's keep things the way they are.
Right. Well, luckily under their political system, the pharmaceutical companies wouldn't have the kind of sway that they have here. I did want to add that I was very taken by your comment earlier about how difficult it is to try and explain to people in these other countries or to attempt to rationalize some of the wackiness that's in our system, such as people having to go bankrupt because of medical ailments. I was there when Congress, when they were passing the Medicare Part D plan, and when they added on the rider to preclude Medicare from ever negotiating with pharmaceutical companies, countless Australians asked me to explain that, and I was never able to do it beyond saying, well, pharmaceutical companies donate to our politicians.
That's right.
Anyway, thank you very much for this program.
And that will be an issue that comes up very soon, early on in the next Congress.
I hope so. Bye.
We only have a couple of minutes. I do want to comment. We got an email from a listener who quotes the Federal Register that says, by law, no Title X, no federal funds have ever been spent on abortion. The family planning regulations require that women who face unintended pregnancy be given non-directive counseling on all of their legal and medical options. That's a quote. So I assume that that is probably realistic and addresses the questions earlier. Joe, let me just ask you, since we only have a couple of minutes here, to sum up what you think are the important bits of information that your program, Healthcare for All, or your podcast brought out.
Well, I think that we took a fresh look at healthcare, at universal healthcare, and tried to get behind the perception that universal healthcare always means socialized medicine. And by socialized medicine, I mean where the government takes over the hospitals, takes over the insurance companies, takes over, well, does away with insurance companies. Runs all the clinics, pays the doctor's salaries, and runs all the hospitals. With a few exceptions, that's how the British system works. And we found that these four countries were not the United Kingdom, Switzerland, France, Germany, and the Netherlands, have significant private sector health systems where there are insurance companies that make some profit, there are doctors who make decent livings, they get the same quality drugs that we get, and go to the same high-quality hospitals and have access to the same technology that we do. They all operate a little bit differently than the best care that you can get in America, but in general, it looks like what a well-insured American gets. And I think, you know, we need to take a look at these systems and find out what works. I mean, we can't have a German system or a Swiss system or a French. None of them apply to the U.S. We're a country of vastly different philosophy. We're not a society that believes in social solidarity. We believe in the individual and freedom of choice and free market. But there are things that these countries are doing that we can learn, that we can use to improve the situation and try to repair part of this broken healthcare system.
Well, I encourage everyone to go to our website and get the link and listen to these podcasts and keep an open mind. Joe, thanks very much for your time.
No problem. Thank you. Enjoyed it.
We'll be back next week, and we'll be talking about prostate cancer with Anchorage urologist Robert Allen.
This has been Line 1, your health connection. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508, or email us at line1@ksKA.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at ksKA.org/line1. CD copies of this program can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.